The Money Show.
Business Books.
Tonight's book is called The Tyranny of Growth. The author is a former colleague, a man called Malcolm Ray. He was deputy editor at Finweek when I was a reporter there. And I tried to read The Tyranny of Growth, but it was hard going. But Raja Bedian's not only read it once, but he's rereading that book. He's rereading it alongside Yaki Salier's book, which is entitled Africa Tomorrow, Pathways to Prosperity, which is also done under the auspices of the Institute for Security Studies South Africa. We're going to focus on The Tyranny of Growth by Malcolm Ray. But before we get to that, Iraj, in Eyewitness News at 7 o'clock, the president speaking about the ANC-NEC meeting today, and the NEC saying that there needs to be a national state of disaster around electricity provision. And immediately I started wondering what balmy sort of solutions government would come up with in terms of solving South Africa's electricity crisis, whether, of course, as Anna Dlamini Zuma would ban smoking again. I was being obviously facetious about it, but is a state of disaster an appropriate reaction to your mind as an economist with many years of experience to solving a problem that has gone from bad to worse and is only getting worse, at least in the short term?
First of all, thank you for inviting me and greetings to our listeners. I think, Bruce, truth to be told, this is a self-government manufactured state of disaster as it is. Doesn't mean that we must declare a state of disaster, because it is. The way to solve the problem is not with the same mindset that we have created it. As we all know. So we need to think completely out of the box. It is a state of disaster, but legalizing it, that means you will give some ministers, some bureaucrats, some political players extraordinary access to some new resources. Obviously, some people in the ANC, they are licking their lips, hoping that something will come their way. The way to solve a technical problem is not to politicize it more than what we have already done. It's to go back to the drawing board, get the right expertise in place. No amount of slogans and disaster sort of sensations or policy commitment is going to solve our energy problem. We have a very simple technical issue that the politicians must get out of the way, not to become more centrally involved by being the state of disaster managers or guidance or governance or whatever. They must get out of the way, bring the right competencies around the table, and give them carte blanche scope, freedom from all this nonsense that has wrapped around ESCOM and many other organizations, and then give them 6 to 9 months. But much like the state of disaster, that team need to report to the nation. What is their plan? They should open themselves to scrutiny by all and the citizens, and then report on it on a monthly basis and get the thing done.
Yeah, I mean, it does worry me when governments who have proven themselves inadequate in managing crises then try to take on more responsibility in the self-inflicted crisis of load shedding, because it does open the way for all kinds of malfeasance and graft. Let's move on to the book, the reason we invited you on, but thank you for that, Iraj, giving us that perspective. Malcolm Ray's book, it's a very serious book, The Tyranny of Growth. Now, I must concede, I tried to read it when it first came out, and I'm very, very grateful for your commitment, because I found it fairly hard going, but this is your bread and butter. You weave through the stuff really easily.
Well, it's a fascinating book because Malcolm manages to combine a few difficult elements. One is he's very precise in his historic investigation of the manner in which the conditions and circumstances under which the concept of growth became not only technically possible through Simon Kuznets and team, but also politically became convenient, given the Great Depression, the interwar conditions, the Eastern-Western confrontations, and so on and so forth. So I think the manner in which Malcolm has gone into some of the minutiae of historic records to dig out personalities as well as circumstances is very, very fascinating.
Okay,
I find it very,
because
very useful.
there is a mantra that says we must grow. We must grow. If you grow, you solve problems. If we get South African economic growth at 5% a year over 10 years, we solve unemployment, we solve multiple crises, we can fund NHI, everybody can have ice cream for breakfast. It'll be a paradise in which to live. It'll be phenomenal. But that's not true, is it? In terms of growth, growth
Absolutely
isn't,
not.
not all growth is
Absolutely
equal.
not, Bruce. I think that the not only the incredible value of Malcolm's insight and research is that, of course, he's not the first to say the point that the way we calculate GDP growth is really inexplicably simplistic, in the sense that we look at the private gains and we not calculate into the measurement the public losses. For example, corporates that every day you report on, their turnover up, their bottom line up, because they don't pay for the damage that they impose on the society. They don't take into account the externalities, so to speak, or public damage to the environment, to the livelihood of communities around them, to the sustainability of businesses in the same sector. So if you so-called recklessly accumulate and report on that on a narrow basis, of course you can grow and the share price responds to it. And we've all been conditioned in the media and in academia and everywhere else to take that on a sort of knee-jerk reaction, and growth is up, turnover is up 52%, profit is up 33%, share price goes up, and pension gets locked into those type of share papers. So I think Malcolm's point is, as many others, that we need to cool off, we need to sit back, and we need to find another more balanced, more realistic, and more sustainable measure of growth. Growth per se is not bad, but growth in the manner in which GDP growth has become the ultimate indicator of success of societies and political ideology is absolutely problematic. As I mentioned before, Malcolm is not the only one, and the
No.
first one to say. Many, many economists, the Nobel Peace Prize winners, the like of Amartya Sen, and so on, they have been questioning this for decades. But it has taken a disaster like the COVID pandemic to bring it home that growth is not what everybody thinks it is. And it is a very one-sided, ideologically driven, mathematically or arithmetically flawed, and conceptually unsustainable.
Yeah, growth is better than no growth. And I'll throw this example at you. Say 2001 to 2008, we were growing 3, 4, 5% a year. I don't know what the average growth rate was over that time. We created 1.5, maybe 2 million jobs during that time. South Africans were feeling confident. We could box above our weight. We were feeling bulletproof. We were in an expansionary frame of mind. Nothing could get us down. It was a far happier place to be than the last 10 years of sub-zero and very low growth. Do we need to be more focused on the kind of growth perhaps that we seek?
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, no growth is not an option. The question is what type of growth and what are the circumstances, the conditions within which growth is generated, and that growth needs to lead to other indicators of growth. For example, if growth is only industrial output, but not the well-being of the society, not the welfare of community, just because we grow and media says we should be happy and we are a happier place, doesn't mean that the poor and the hungry in the midst of plenty are happier. It does not mean that those who are suffering in the hospitals and there isn't enough care for them because the resources are not properly utilized. We may be buoyant in terms of indicators, historic indicators of growth, and you and I may be very excited or feel psychologically better, but the majority who are sidelined, the majority who under no circumstances have any chance of getting into the economy, they are not any happier. I've always mentioned that we've got a situation where the faster we grow, because of the set of circumstances that we have, the faster the South African economy grows, the more marginalized will be the underprivileged. Simply because the faster this economy grows, the more skilled people it will require, the more systems it will require, the more resources it will require. And guess what? The majority of our populations are not skilled. Their education system is inadequate. And therefore, the faster the economy grows, the more they feel disadvantaged, sidelined, and desperate.
I forget the exact wording of it, but it was a Zapiro cartoon from the early 2000s. And it's one of those scenes with the Joburg skyline in the background. There is a shack, a kid sitting on the little stoop of the shack reading a newspaper. There's a woman washing clothes in a puddle with a baby on her back. And the kid is reading the newspaper saying, "The good news is that growth is coming back," or something along those lines, I think. And it is that struck me at the time, it still strikes me in perpetuity, as being the ultimate, I think, of there it is, I found it. The little boy is sitting on a box outside the shack. You'll be glad to know that according to the analysts, the economic fundamentals are in place. And there is a woman washing clothes in a puddle outside a shack. And for most people, their experience of the economy is not one that the economic fundamentals suggests exists.
Yeah, of course, the subtext of that, Bruce, which Malcolm very eloquently and articulately fleshes out, is that the minute that you get sucked into that concept, politicians suddenly they sort of normalize the abnormal. They don't see that because the media says everybody is happy, and JSE goes up or some other index goes up, and the politicians, they think they've done their job, or leaders, both in corporate and the private sector. And when I say politicians, I don't mean necessarily in a narrow terms, but the CEOs feel that, oh, well, we are doing well, our stock is doing well, but nothing out there for the poor and the disadvantaged has changed at all. And therefore, they abdicate their responsibility in leadership. And that is really, in terms of tyranny of growth, Malcolm really traces it back into the 1920s and the secularization of human welfare, the reduction of a very complex issue called human happiness or human contentment or welfare to a number that is supposed to capture all these complex processes. And leaders, both in corporate and in the public sector, are very satisfied because they are the elite. They talk to each other. They get excited by sharing these indicators with each other, and their bonuses are banked, and the rest is hunky-dory for them. In the meantime, the rest of the society watching this sort of spectacle of lack of reality, that exactly like that kid who's sitting on a box, as you mentioned, says, what growth has come back? What does it mean? My box is still the same. My mom is washing as it was 2 years ago when there was no growth. And that reality, both at the national level, at the continental level, and international level, is something that we have to rethink. Of course, environmental disaster that has come as a result of this single-minded elite's focus on GDP growth is now for all of us to behold. And for me, it's, and many others, it's really time that we stop this treadmill and rethink. Not accept the abnormal as normal. Intellectually, we know that the concept is deficient, but it's become embedded in the institutions of the United Nations, national statistics agencies, and we all have to do it. And we all know it's problematic, but we all have to do it, and we keep doing it, hoping that somehow things will get better. And as you know better than me, doing the same thing, expecting a different result decade after decade is a good definition of madness. So as a society, we've got ourselves into a kind of collective madness that has huge consequences for the environment, huge consequences for the welfare and social political stability of the societies that we live in. Whether we are rich or poor, quite frankly, doesn't matter anymore, because these unsustainable conditions, this abnormal and bizarre configuration of the elite vis-a-vis the rest causes political instability.
Thank you, Dr. Iraj Abedian. Iraj is the Chief Executive at Pan-African Investments and Research Services. Top economist, Iraj Abedian.